Welcome to the Life Insurance Financial Education Podcast. We're pulling back the curtain on high cash value life insurance, revealing its role in a comprehensive financial strategy to help you build wealth and achieve your financial goals. I'm your host, James Barber, your Oregon Cash Flow Pro.
This is Jane with Tax Exempt Millionaire Club.
And I'm Carlo Vaccaro with NetWealth Finance.
Welcome, and today we are going to be talking about infinite banking. We're going to split this up into two parts, because infinite banking itself entails the accumulation phase, or what we like to think of as the first generational wealth, part of building the infinite bank. And then we've got the second generation plus, where you're maintaining that generational wealth with this strategy. And those can be treated a bit differently. Infinite banking itself is the birth child of Nelson Nash. Nelson Nash came up with this concept many decades ago. And I know through my research, when I became an insurance agent, I came across this concept and it immediately intrigued me in its simplicity and the apparent usefulness and taking over the banking function in our lives and the amount of money that just bleeds out in interest. Infinite banking itself doesn't require high cash value life insurance on the face of it. In fact, infinite banking can be used with a number of different products. You can use a checking account or a savings account, put that money in the bank, let it sit there. When you need it, you take it out, and then you just pay it back. You can keep that money under your bed if you wanted to. Whenever you need to borrow money, you just borrow it from under your bed, and then you pay it back right under the bed. You can borrow it from a stock account, like a brokerage account. They will lend you money from that, and you can just pay it back. We can do the same thing in life insurance as well, and that's the preferred product. But I just wanted to highlight that you can really use all kinds of different things to do infinite banking. So why is it that most of the people that talk about this have settled on whole life insurance, or IUL, or essentially high cash value life insurance for doing infinite banking?
I like the fact it is a life insurance itself. Also, tax benefit and the death benefit combined make it unbeatable for what we want to practice in the infinite banking aspect.
Yes, and I would add that along with those tax benefits and the death benefit, we have some stuff in life insurance that kind of goes beyond. I've done some videos on SBLOC, you kind of mentioned, with borrowing against your stocks. So securities-based line of credit, there's some risks there. There's some challenges there. It's also generally going to be with your normal brokerage. So there's not tax advantages in that account specifically. But you also don't have access to nearly as much. Life insurance is one of the most secure assets that you can have. And so we can borrow 90, high, sometimes up to high 90% of the cash value that we have in our policies. So that is a really big advantage. Another one that you didn't mention, but like 401k loans, this could be another tool for infinite banking. And I have used 401k loans for various reasons and purposes. That can be another tool. Well, there's limitations, there's rules set by your employer. There's various things and challenges there. You know, $50,000 limit, that is a limit. So with life insurance, I think one of the big advantages is we accumulate in our life insurance and in our infinite bank, our line of credit, as we accumulate, there really isn't a limit. We can have our line of credit be millions of dollars. And so there's contractual ability to access that through policy loans. Those are some reasons why I think life insurance is a particularly good, or is the best tool for this purpose.
Good points from both of you guys. So essentially what it boils down to, when we look at the risks and the benefits, that's what makes high cash value life insurance stand out as the product of choice. If you're going to put that money under your bed, what benefits do we get from it? It's just a place to store the money. That's basically it. That's the only benefit. You get pretty quick access. But what's the risk? The risk is you could have it taken in a home invasion. It could burn up in a fire, right? Those are pretty significant risks. If you keep your money in a checking or savings account, we don't have to worry about it burning up in a fire, but it's also not going to do very much from a benefit standpoint. It's not going to really grow. If we put our money in the stock account, it's at risk of a margin call We're not going to have 95% of it available to borrow out. We're only going to be able to borrow out 30 to 50% maybe. And then we also have to worry that in the case of a market crash, we're going to have to be paying that back to avoid a margin call, or they sell all of our positions before we know it. So like, those are some significant risks when we consider some of these other things that we might otherwise think may be an attractive place to do banking from, that we don't get those risks with life insurance. And then with the life insurance, the high cash value life insurance, we add in the benefits of a death benefit, guaranteed growth, downside protection. Performance is not necessarily correlated to the performance of the stock market, or it's not correlated to the downside of the stock market. So we've got all kinds of benefits, and it really does end up being the ideal vehicle for doing our infinite banking. With regard to high cash value life insurance and infinite banking, there's generally 7 different categories that we look at as benefits. The first being, of course, this is life insurance. There's a death benefit. This is going to provide financial security to our loved ones in the case of premature demise, or eventually, I mean, nobody's found a way to cheat it yet, but at some point, all of us pass away. So the death benefit passes on tax-free. That's your number one benefit to utilizing cash value life insurance as part of the infinite banking process.
The next benefit that I think is pretty solid for life insurance is wealth preservation. There's not a lot of assets out there that are either zero is your hero or a guaranteed return. The ability to preserve your wealth and not step back with life insurance, of having that downside protection, is really strong for being able to preserve your wealth.
Yeah, you're not at risk to market downsides. If your money is stored in the stock market, it's at risk of market crashes. And even in real estate goes down in value sometimes. That just doesn't happen with our life insurance cash values.
So the next one is about control over finances. Think about this way. It's a bank, right? We're changing the banking function. We will have access to a significant amount of money inside this IBC policy. A lot of people saying whole life and IBC can be a forced saving account, but we are utilizing this policy on top of the forced saving. We also pull the money out and do what other investments we want to do.
It's contractually guaranteed to allow you access to that cash value. You don't have to ask for permission to say, can I use some money to go do this other investment? Can I use this money to go buy a vehicle? Can I use this money to go on vacation? Whatever you need to use it for, you just ask and you get it. There's significant control over your finances inside of that life insurance policy. Following that, we've got cash value growth. That's kind of significant. The whole point of taking over the banking function is to help us grow our wealth. And policies build value over time with uninterrupted compounding growth. In whole life policies, it might be a guaranteed growth. It could be a dividend return above and beyond that guaranteed growth. And in an IUL, it could be downside protection in the market, but upside potential, so we get to take advantage of market indexes as they go up. But we're not going to take part in market losses when the markets are down. So decades and decades and generations of compounding tax-advantaged growth is basically unmatched.
So the next one that is sort of connected to that control of finances, but access to funds. The primary way that we access the funds is through something like policy loans, but if you need to, there are ways to do surrender or partial surrender where you might not want the life insurance anymore. Now, there can be tax implications for those aspects, but mainly the primary way that we like to access is through policy loans. And that's really powerful, as we've mentioned a couple of times. We have a contractual ability to take those policy loans, and they generally very fast. I've used my loans. I can have funds clearing in my account within a couple of days. So really a great tool for accessing our cash value.
And what kind of limits do they put on that for borrowing?
As far as I know, there's not going to be any limits. Some carriers, like in my own policies, will have certain behaviors. If you're getting a certain amount, you might have to get a notary for a certain amount of funds. I mean, we're talking very big numbers when you might run into that requirement. But for the most part, there's just no limits on what you can get in a policy loan.
So they're not going to be asking you why you're borrowing from it in order to approve you for it. But there could be some other requirements, like clearly you have to have the money in there. You're borrowing against the cash value, not the death benefit. And yes, if you ask for really large amounts of money, they might want to have you verify in other ways, such as using the notary.
Yes, exactly. So that's when we access the funds in our policy, we're accessing the funds that are in our policy. There are certain circumstances when we talk about living benefit riders where we may have access to a little bit beyond our cash value. But for the most part, when we take these policy loans, we are limited by what our cash value is. And it's generally going to be somewhere in the high 90s or mid to high 90% of the cash value in our policy. So it's a very high percentage since it is such a secure asset.
And now, just to clarify, we're borrowing against the funds. So we're just collateralizing the funds inside of our policy. We're borrowing the money from the life insurance company.
Yep.
Just wanted to make that clear.
Well, let's talk about another one, the tax advantages. We mentioned so many times about the tax because for a lot of us, the middle class, we pay a lot of tax. We pretty much paying 50%, depends on your tax bracket. You think you earn a lot of money when you look at your paycheck, pretty much half is gone. But for IBC, if you practice well, you will have the tax deferred growth. It's income tax deferred. If you start using money, like what we just mentioned, to take a loan out, it's tax free. So over the years of compounding effect, the tax advantage can be significant for as a portion of our portfolio. So nothing can beat the tax advantage of IBC. A lot of people compare IBC versus Roth IRA, but Roth IRA, you have the contribution limit every year per the IRS regulation, like what Carl just mentioned. You can really fund this heavily if you have that significant amount to contribute to your IBC policy.
We can have much, much greater amounts of money that we get tax advantages on in relation to some other things that have potential tax advantages. We can experience those to a greater degree with these types of policies. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
I think one of the last benefits that you have with life insurance is flexible payments. So when we have a loan against our life insurance policy, there's not really repayment terms. The loan, you have loan interest that accrues, and you could choose to pay that, or it will just be added to the loan balance at the end of the year. At the policy anniversary, you will start. So it's annual simple interest up until that policy anniversary, and then you might start compounding interest that following year. So for the most part, we don't have to pay the loans if we don't want to, and then at the end of our life, if we still have a loan balance, it just gets deducted from our death benefit. So there is a lot of flexibility, and you can use that in various ways. It can sort of be like an interest-only line of credit. I think that's a good way to use it for things like bridge financing, for real estate deals or business deals. There's just so many ways that you can use that, but having that flexibility. And if you want, you can treat it like an amortizing loan and have set up your own payments however you want to, but there's no requirements for that for policy loans.
Good points. So you don't have to pay it back if you're unable to. It's certainly a good idea, as Nelson Nash likes to say. You want to be an honest banker, pay yourself back just like if you were borrowing the money from somebody else. And like any other line of credit out there, when you make that loan repayment, it's going to be available again. I think that was a good summary of some of the marketing points that get made in regard to infinite banking, in particular with cash value life insurance. Let's go back a little bit and let's look at the infinite banking concept itself, taking over the banking functions in your life. And why would we want to do that? What is the benefit of doing that?
One thing that I want to mention in this is that we can start to lock in compound interest on more of our income. This can be a great tool for increasing our savings rate because we don't lose access to it. This is in real banks, our system operates on fractional reserve banking. They're constantly loaning out a high percentage of what their deposits are. So we have that same ability to start locking in compound interest by funding our policies heavily, high percentage of our incomes, and start locking in compound interest, sort of acting like a bank in how we might end up with having some loan balances, and then we try to offset that interest as early as possible or as quick as possible. So I think that's one way in which we can really look to increase the amount of compound interest that we're earning by parking our money in there, or a higher percentage of it in there.
Well, to me, I want to emphasize the concept of infinite. Why we call that infinite? Because we can take the loan out tax-free, as we just mentioned. We can use it, and then we pay the interest back. We can also pay the principal back. Everything will be restored to its original level. Next time, when we need that for real estate purpose, for business investment purpose, buying instrument, whatever the reason you need the money, you can just pull that out, repeat the whole process. That's why we want to take full control of our own finance instead of giving the money, save it in a savings account, and then the bank will use our money as what Carlo just mentioned. They are loaning that out as an extremely high interest rate to other people. Why don't you take full control of your own banking function?
Yeah, so when we talk about taking over the banking function in our lives, think back to the last time you had a major purchase. What did you have to do? You're either sitting on cash because you did a good job of saving it up and you had it ready to go, or you had to go ask somebody else for the money. For most of us, when we're in that accumulation phase or early on in our lives, we need to go ask other people for money. We generally tie up most of our funds, whether it's putting money aside in retirement accounts or having already made major purchases. So we need money. We go to a bank. We go to some other type of a lender, and they might charge us high interest rate. They might charge us points, other fees that might get tacked onto there. They're going to require that we make payments throughout the period. And if we don't meet those payments, they're going to take back whatever it was that we bought, right? They're going to have something as collateral, and they're going to take that back. How different would it be if when you had a major purchase, you knew that there was your own bank that you could go to and borrow at 5% interest anytime you want for the rest of your life? I mean, when we think about it that way, that sounds pretty good, right? That can be the case. Like that can actually happen, but it doesn't happen overnight. We have to be deliberate. We have to build that bank ourselves. That bank is your second business, right? Your first business being whatever your job is or whatever your business is. But then your second business, as Nelson Nash likes to say, is you're getting in the business of banking. You need to build that bank. It's going to take some time. So this is why we talk about the first generation of infinite banking, the accumulation phase. And then next week, we're going to be talking about the second generation or later on in the infinite banking process and how things might get treated differently. Well, at the beginning part of it, we don't have the ability to just go and ask for all kinds of money at 5% interest and not have a required payment to go back, because we haven't taken the time yet to build that up. But the concept itself for infinite banking, this is what we're working towards. We're working towards, eventually, we're going to have the ability that we or our loved ones or people that we know can borrow from us, from our bank. We can borrow from our bank, or other people can borrow from our bank if we allow them to, at whatever the rates that we set are. But we know that we have access to it at somewhere around 5%. That's where most of the policies that we can get these days are like locked in. Maximum 8% in some policies, but most of them somewhere around 5%. That's a pretty good feeling. I remember back when I bought my first house and rates were over 8% for the house. And my first car, I think I paid over 12%. And that seemed like a good deal at the time. Like there's always people that will loan you money to buy a car at 30%+. But I thought I was getting a pretty good deal in my first car when I was paying, I think it was a little over 10%, something like that. But imagine if my parents had built an infinite bank and they could just loan me the money at 5%. Or they could loan me the money at 10% instead of me going to the bank. And they're borrowing at 5%. I'm paying back them at 10%. And they could set that 5% aside in a life insurance policy that will eventually pay that death benefit out to me. It's a circle of life.
So I would add that rate sounds good. Borrow at 5%. Even better, that's not our net cost to borrow when we're borrowing at that rate. It could be less. We could even be having gains when we're borrowing against our policy. So I think we mentioned some of that, the concept of arbitrage that is possible in an IUL. But even if we're doing a wash loan, oftentimes available, or maybe some smaller offset, it might not be a full wash. Our net cost to borrow is generally going to be pretty low in one of these policies. So the rate that we're paying when you replace some other type of financing tool, so a 10% car loan with a 5% rate that we're paying to the insurance company, well, when we're paying that back, we're also earning on those funds. So in the end, the net rate is lower, and that's really powerful when we start to replace these other financing mechanisms with that.
Good points, because I just mentioned about having access to a line of credit for the rest of your life at 5%. Didn't even touch on that money that we've been putting aside to build that bank never stops growing and compounding, even though we're accessing those funds to do the financing in our lives.
We mentioned this already, but I think to me, there's two significant factors. One is the speed, right? We can put the money, we have the bank already, which we build up. It's our own IBC. We take the loan out. We don't need to wait for 30 days, 60 days. They're going to ask all kinds of paperwork, tax return, wait for the underwriting to get back to us, request additional document. And then another factor to me is the peace of mind. You know you have that money. It's right there. It's accessible whenever you need it. If you don't use money or you have the money can turn around, you put it back, whatever you have is already there. That peace of mind, especially I'm doing real estate full time, that peace of mind is significant to my business when I'm doing real estate investing.
Yeah, the things you mentioned there, I was going to say, that sounds like somebody who does commercial real estate investing, where you've got all kinds of hoops that you have to jump through to get money from a bank so that you can do your deals. I think some of the biggest beneficiaries of these types of policies, of the infinite banking process, are real estate investors. Even if you do fix and flips, if you normally use a hard money lender, you're going to go out, you're going to borrow the money at 15, 20%, maybe pay a couple of points. Like if you're planning on borrowing it for a short period of time, so on its as a net cost, it's not that much in relation to what you're going to borrow. But if you take the time and prepare and build your own bank, instead of going to that hard money lender, you go to your own bank. And now you're going to save the 15 or the 20%. You're going to save on the points. How much more profitable does each of your transactions become when you don't have that expense? How much easier is it to do a flip if your timeline, because of some unexpected problem, goes from 3 months to 6 months, and you've got this 15% or greater loan to a hard money lender breathing down your neck that you need to make payments on each month, and suddenly you got delayed? Everything becomes easier if you don't have to worry about that, because you're borrowing from your own bank. Now, you're going to be an honest banker. You are going to pay your bank back. But having that flexibility allows you to ride out some of those tough times. And I think that's why our real estate investors really like this.
I would add, so you'd mentioned a couple of times the you pay the points. So oftentimes those lenders might be in that 2 points range. That adds up. And over time, when you close those deals, especially you get to bigger deals, 2 points on a big deal, that's money that can stay in your pocket. And those holding costs, so as you're doing a flip or maybe a BRRRR deal, you might have some payments in that meantime. Well, as we talked about earlier, you have the flexible payments. You don't actually have to be making payments during that holding period. You can wait until you actually, you know, pursue closing the deal or selling the deal or whatever it is. You can hold them onto that loan and keep that loan with the against your insurance policy and pay once you've closed on selling that property. And if you can, make payments on the loan. But it does add some flexibility to working deals that you might not otherwise be able to do at a given time when you use your policy loans in this way.
Let me tell a quick story. Just say now you have $1 million. This IBC policy, the cash value is $1 million. You can go out and buy a lot of commercial property at $1 million. It will give you instant cash flow, say if the cap rate is about 10%. And then it will have all the tax advantages of that commercial property. You can do a lot of things to increase the cash value for this portfolio. On top of that, your 5%, as we just mentioned, it can either be a wash or you can actually have a arbitrage on that percentage. Adding all together, basically what you're doing is you have a small snowball of wealth of money. Now it's getting bigger, bigger, bigger. Just do it in 10, 20, 30 years and then pass it down to your next generation or the next generation. It's unbelievable beneficial to your own family.
Yeah, so we're just getting started on the benefits of infinite banking. This is the accumulation portion. This is where most of us are at these days. I mean, the concept itself has only been around for 30 years or so. We're still in the infancy stage. We're not in second or third generation, but we will talk about what that might look like next week. To wrap up this week with what we're looking at, there's all kinds of ways that you can utilize a line of credit that you've built up, that you have access to contractually anytime you want for any reason. And that is when we're talking about taking over the banking function in our lives. We have these wonderful products that get growth. And we're currently, well, I would say probably most of us are in the accumulation phase where we're trying to grow our wealth right now. We're hoping to get to a point where in the next generation or two, now they have wealth. They have lots of wealth, hopefully more wealth than they know what to do with. And theirs is more managing the wealth. But we've got to get to the accumulation part of it. And there's safety in using this as part of that growth strategy. We've talked about some of those wealth preservation benefits. Those are very real when it comes to building up our wealth. We need a place to store that wealth. This is the place to store it safely. Downside protection, good growth guarantees. And it really just serves as the ideal place to get started in the infinite banking. So with that, I think we'll wrap up our part one of this topic, which is the accumulation phase and the first generation, and we're going to jump in next week on the latter part of this. What happens after we build it up? What does this look like? Stick around. We've got more good information to come, and we appreciate you guys joining us along for this ride. Is there a call to action that either of you have for these fine folks this week?
So I think I'd like to throw out, we've talked a few times, you mentioned Nelson Nash, and it is a good read. It's not a perfect book, but Becoming Your Own Banker by Nelson Nash is how a lot of us kind of learned and were introduced to this concept. So it is a powerful tool. And if you want something to read for the new year, I would recommend picking up that book.
I will second that. We'll leave a link in the description to make it easy. If you want to click on that link, you can just pick up the book that way or go to your nearest bookseller.
This might sound a little confusing in the beginning, but tag along with us. We'll explain more and then learn as much as you can. And don't hesitate. Once you feel you're ready, jump and talk to us.
And we do have a plan in a few weeks that we will be doing a deep dive into becoming your own banker. So if you pick it up and you get a read ahead of time, you're going to be ready for that. And with that, I'm James Barber, your Oregon Cash Flow Pro. I'm licensed across the country for life insurance and annuities. You can find me on YouTube at Oregon Cash Flow Pro.
This is Jane with Tax Exempt Millionaire Club, a school community. You can find me there. I'm also licensed in multiple states. I would like to talk to you.
And I'm Carlo Vaquero with Net Wealth Finance. We'll work with clients across the country as well. And you can find my YouTube channel, SHAPNIN.
Take care. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for watching.
Thank you.